Godzilla is now in New York City.
Monster 01 and 02, commence the attack.
Welcome to this week's episode of Stomp This Way. Andrew, we're back.
Oh, yeah, we are.
It's our second episode since our revival. Back to doing this baby weekly. How are we feeling? How are we feeling so far?
I'm feeling pretty good about this.
Pretty good. So, just off the top, I've now seen Minus One 3 times. And, you know, I think we were pretty glowing about it in our review of it last week, but I don't think I was glowing enough. That's a damn good movie.
That's a real good movie.
That's a real good movie. I'm talking Oscar-worthy movie, and I don't say that with irony. I mean it. If they can nominate freaking Avatar 2 and Black Panther 2 for Best Picture, they can nominate this. But yeah, hey, I'm not here to get into all that.
No.
What we are here to get into today is another character of ours that's had a recent resurgence, and that is Gamera.
Yeah.
During our absence, he came roaring back to life in the form of a Netflix anime. Kind of cringe every time I say Netflix anime. But no, he came back. He had a little show of his own. And so we're here to talk about it because we love Gamera. Now, full disclosure, it's been a few weeks since we actually watched it.
It's been more than a few weeks.
It's been a couple months, probably. We didn't have time to sit around and rewatch it for this podcast. I know, not the picture of professionalism.
No, neither is that.
Neither is not silencing my cell phone. But we will next week be much more prepared because we will rewatch Singular Point before we review it next week, because it's been like 2 years
since we watched that,
at least since we watched that. But no, but we are going to talk about Gamera because I think the show is, well, one, because what else are we going to talk about on this show? Also because I think the show is worth talking about. So yeah, Gamera Rebirth, a little bit of quick trivia, co-produced by Kadokawa, who is a pretty big time anime studio, and Netflix, of course. And the director, Hiroyuki Shishita, was co-director on the Godzilla anime trilogy. Gotta be honest, when I first heard that, I kind of got a little nervous because, I mean, you guys can go back and listen to our reviews on the anime trilogy. Spoiler alert, they weren't glowing.
No.
But that's neither here nor there. And they are doing a manga adaption of this, if you just love manga so much. I don't know if they've done an English translation, but that Kadokawa is, I think, still currently producing. So, anyway, yeah, what are we going to do? Let's do some cast and crew. This was directed by Hiroyuki Shishita, written by Hiroyuki Shishita, Kenta Ihara, Hiroshi Seiko, and Tetsuya Yamada, with music by Shuji Katayama. So we're going to listen to a quick trailer, then we're going to come back, and we're going to get right into this thing. My plot summary is very brief, just kind of covers the real basics, doesn't go in depth about every episode, and we're not going to go in depth on every episode, no. We're just going to kind of cover the broad idea of the show, but anyway, trailer, and we'll be back.
<笑>逃げた方がいいんじゃないか。このまま放っておいてか。下水道はまずいぞ。<笑> まだそれほど大きくなってないはず。
C5 地点の3体はすでに壊滅。
フォークシュンは
あと10分ほどです。
わかりました。対処します。
おい、誰か応答しろ。
どうかした？
メガネがどこかへ。
すげえ情報があるんだ。
え、本当？
はしゃぎすぎだろ。
なんだよこれ。
突如出現した飛行物体、急上昇しています。
何？遺憾ながら悪い状況は重なる。
近づいてきますよ。
まさか。
危険手当てではやってられんぞ。
All right, we're back, and here is the plot summary. And again, this is from memory and Wikipedia. And a very brief summary of the show. One summer in the late 80s, three friends, Bako, Joe, and Junichi, are spending their last summer together. However, the arrival of giant kaiju interrupts their fun. Over the next few weeks, the children, now joined by bully-turned-friend Brody, Brody are herded around by the Eustace Foundation, encountering giant monsters and constantly being saved by the giant turtle Gamera. But in the final episodes, the children learn that Bako is to be sacrificed because of his genetic code, which allows the Eustace Foundation to control the kaiju. However, the kids, along with the help of Gamera, escape the evil plot. Gamera uses the last of his strength to defeat a superpowered Gaios, but turns to dust, and Joe seemingly sacrifices himself to get the others to safety. In the closing scenes, the kids discover an egg that hatches a baby Gamera, and a radio crackles with a message from the seemingly still alive Joe. So, yeah, there you go. Basically, what happens?
It's a very basic plot.
Very basic plot summary. But, yeah, so, you know, when I heard about the show, I was obviously very excited for it because, you know, we hadn't had anything Gamera-related other than that, like, little two-minute test reel footage or whatever since 2006 when Gamera the Brave had come out. So that had been 15 years ago. No, let me do math. 17 years ago, something like that.
Yeah.
So
it's been a while.
It had been a while. So I think Gamera was past due for a resurgence. And of course you knew with Godzilla coming back and, you know, and all that kind of stuff, and the Shin Ultraman and all that kind of stuff. You knew Gamera was coming back. It was just a matter of time before someone put up the money for it. And you know who put up the money for it?
Netflix.
And you know, Netflix, I had a big spiel about this on my failed startup podcast about, you know, Netflix anime and their poor track record. Need us not forget, you know, Death Note. Or
Full Metal Alchemist.
Full Metal Alchemist or
Cowboy Bebop.
Cowboy Bebop. One Piece, just an aside, One Piece was actually pretty good. You should go, if you like anime adaptions, go check out One Piece. But yeah, so I was a little skeptical. Of course, like I said earlier, I was even more skeptical when I was when I heard that the co-director of the anime trilogy, Godzilla anime trilogy, was coming on board as director, because again, not the finest pieces of Godzilla fiction. But, you know, the trailers looked good for it. I love Gamera. I was excited to get new Gamera stuff. I was excited that they were bringing back some of the old kaiju. So, yeah. There are, what, 6 episodes, I believe?
I think so.
I think there are 6 episodes, Gamera, and 5 other old foes that they bring back. But, yeah. So, basically, the show, you know, it starts out, we are introduced to these three friends, what did I say their names were? Bako, whatever his name is. Joe. And Junichi.
Brody.
Well, we'll get to Brody in a second. But we have these three main core Japanese kids first. I mean, you know, they're basically, this show is set up like your old kind of 80s Spielberg kid adventure kind of show. Like a Stand By Me or a... I just do a total blank. What's the one where they go looking for the pirate ship or whatever?
Goonies.
The Goonies. Goonies, yes. Gosh, what's wrong with me? So it's very much in that kind of Spielbergian vein, like those movies. And so, you know, they're... I don't know. Wikipedia said it was set in 1989. I don't remember if the show ever actually... I'm sure it did say that at some point. But you can tell you're kind of in the past because they don't have cell phones and such. But... yeah, they're spending their last summer together because I believe Baco is moving away or something. And they, you know, they established that Joe kind of has like this older brother relationship with Baco. And, you know, he rides him around on the back of his bike everywhere because Baco hasn't learned to ride a bike yet. And Baco is kind of a small kid. Yes. So Joe kind of stands up for him. And then Junichi is the nerdy one, which... you learn, you know, it's set up so that you think Junichi is just another boy. And then, like, I don't remember, halfway through the show, it's supposed to be like this big reveal that she's actually a girl. I think it's kind of weird, but I'll get to that in a little bit. And then, yes, you said Brody. Brody is a member of this, like, trio of Army Brats, American Army Brat kids. His father is
a general.
General Admiral. I forgot what branch he was from, but. Like the general, one of the main generals, I guess, of the Allied forces that are in Japan or whatever. I say Allied forces like this is 1950 or something. It's 1980s, you know, the U.S. forces in Japan. But Brody's a bully at first. They bullied the local Japanese kids. But then Brody, after the initial monster attack, turns and, you know, they save him and he becomes their friend or whatever. But... So, you know, again, very Spielbergian in the setup. And I like this group of kids in that kind of Spielbergian vibe. I think it, you know, in terms of characters, I think they work very well together, better than any characters we've probably had in an anime kaiju production so far, I would say. Once we are introduced to the kids and everything, we'll, you know, throughout the show, we'll be introduced to, there's this Eustace Foundation, and there's like this woman... I think she's supposed to be like a scientist or something. And then this agent, like for hire guy that follows the kids. They like, quote unquote, abduct the kids.
Yeah.
And then they give them like these cool like pagers or whatever. And then they convince the kids to go on this adventure or whatever. It'll turn out, of course, that the woman is evil. Because the Eustace Foundation is evil. We'll get to it a little bit later, but and then of course you have your other characters that come in and out, like the general, the father's kid, and the kid's father, and things like that. But no, so that's basically the setup of the show. Like I said, I like it. I think the kids work well together as characters. I think the relationship, especially between Baco and Joe, is pretty well defined.
Yeah,
you know, like I said, there's a point in the show where Brody is. I think even before the reveal. Brody is... Now, I thought it was weird because I thought Brody was significantly older than these other kids. Now, I don't know. I don't remember if they say exactly what their ages are at any point. But he's kind of like Ivol and Junichi. And then when it's revealed that she's a girl, he's like infatuated.
Yeah, it gets a little weird.
Which is odd, like I said, because... I don't know. It was odd because up to that point, I had thought there was a significant age gap. But maybe there wasn't. I don't know. No. So there's that bit of it. And, you know, I think they have a lot of good drama, especially between Joe and Baco, especially towards the end of the show. But we're here to talk about the kaiju. So Gamera is in this show. You know, in the first episode, I believe, the city is attacked by Gaios. Gamera shows up and... saves the kids or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Gamera in this show. He's not kind of. They really try to emulate the 90s. This is kind of a spiritual sequel to the 90s trilogy, Heisei trilogy. And that is very much the type of Gamera we get. Maybe a little more friendly than the 90s trilogy Gamera. Especially the Revenge of Iris version. But that is the type of Gamera, both in look and in kind of feel and attitude and everything that we get. And then each episode, he pretty much fights a different kaiju. We have Gaios. They bring back Zegra. Mm-hmm. They bring back Jiger. Is that what's Jiger. Called? The one that lays the egg or whatever inside of him in the original movie. They bring back Varas. And they bring back Knifehead. Gearon.
Knifehead.
Yeah. So, you know, they bring him back, which and they get updates, which is cool. Yeah, and I think the show is pretty good. You know, their episodes are about, 45 minutes to an hour each or something like that. And each episode has a monster fight or two sometimes. And, yeah, I think the show is
pretty good all
together. Pretty good. You know, we get towards the end. Of course, there's a bunch, quote-unquote, plot twists, but pretty obvious. You know, Eustace Foundation, of course, is evil. It gets kind of really fantasy-ish weird stuff. Like, they have been around for thousands of years, and they used to use the kaiju to rule the world, and then the kaiju revolted against them.
You know, that one guy turned Gamera against him.
Oh, yeah, and Gamera turned against him. But they need, in order to regain control of the kaiju, there's this substance that needs to be combined with the genetic code that Bako has in his DNA. And something. And I think at one point they get control of Gamera, don't they?
Yeah, but then the connection with the children bring him back.
But the connection with the children, it always brings him back. it gets pretty far out there. And of course, the woman who I forgot what her name was, but that's been following him around, she's turns out to be evil, and her aunt are like struggling for control over this foundation, and she essentially has her aunt stranded on a
moon base
or something. And yeah, and then we get towards the end of the show. So Gamera goes through. I mean, there's some cool fights. The Gaios fight, I think I remember really enjoying the Zegra fight. They were in the kids were in a submarine, and they were, you know, and they were all fighting underwater, and they were using the submarine and trying to disorient the Zegra and help. And the Zegra had like this super long tail or whatever. and they got on land at one point and had a throwdown with Gamera. Gearon, which we'll talk about creature design. Gearon was pretty cool in his update and everything they did with him. Towards the end, of course, Varas is kind of set up as the big bad. He's like this underground kaiju that they revive. And he can do, like, this anti-gravitational stuff.
Yeah.
And he, like, you know, the kids get on a spaceship. They're going to escape to the moon base before, you know, Varas destroys the world or whatever. And I think Varas, like, shoots down their spaceship or whatever, their shuttle. And that's when Joe, like, they all get in the escape shuttle, but it won't launch from the inside. And Joe has to go outside and launch it from the outside on the ship and gets left behind.
Very emotional moment.
Very emotional scene. There's the agent guy that follows him around. You know, he's never really a great guy. He's just kind of always trying to get out of it. But he does kind of help the kids at the end, I guess.
He turns out to be a halfway decent guy.
Okay guy. You know, and then you have the drama with Brody and his father. They're kind of, you know, buttheads, and Brody just wants to, you know, get praise from his father or whatever, and you know, so they do some stupid stuff because of that. But yeah, you know, overall,
not that
a good show. You know, I would say that I really liked the ending of the show until, and I kind of said this in last week's episode, I hate fake out deaths. They're like one of my least favorite cliches in cinema. Even though Lord of the Rings, which is like my favorite movie trilogy ever, is all cliche deaths. Yes. Fake deaths. But the fact that it kind of ruined the emotional moments for me, the fact that at the very end it reveals that Joe is still alive or something, allegedly. But and then, of course, Gamera does die, quote unquote, dies after he fights the evil Super Gaios or whatever. He turns to ash or whatever. But then there's this egg that they find, and it hatches a wee little baby Gamera. Wee little baby Gamera. which is, you know, of course, in case they want a sequel or whatever. Which is, they set this up for a sequel.
Oh, yeah, they
do. So maybe, depending on the ratings, we'll get one. Maybe not. I'm not sure. But, yeah. You know, basically my review will be, if you like kaiju, which if you listen to this podcast, you probably do, and you like The Goonies and Stand By Me and stuff like that, this is pretty much a crossover of those two things. So if you like those two things, you'll probably like this show. I mean, it's not perfect. I think some of the episodes, I don't know if all the episodes need to be 45 minutes long. At times it kind of drags and you're like, whatever. We'll talk about, in place of effects, we'll talk about animation here in a little bit. That'll probably be my biggest gripe about the show. But no, overall, I think story-wise, it's a pretty good show. It's a lot better. I was worried that it would be the Godzilla trilogy all over again. But I think it's a lot better. The characters are much better.
Mm-hmm.
Much better paced. Just a lot better overall than the Godzilla trilogy. You agree on all points so far?
Oh, I agree on everything you said so far.
Okay. Well, let's get into, what do we do? Creature design, I guess, first. Mm-hmm. So, let me bring up a photo, because memory is not great. So we'll start with Gamera. Gamera, like I said, very much the 90s era type Gamera, which is my favorite Gamera look. He's kind of got glowing green eyes. He's got the kind of spiky shell, kind of the spiky, you know, like the kind of the layered armor
mm-hmm.
kind of thing going on. They bring back the classic Gamera roars and stuff. Shoots the fireballs.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, classic Gamera. I like it. Zegra is really cool. Or, well, let's see. I think Gaios is it first. Let's do Gaios. Gaios looks pretty much like a...
Gaios.
He looks like Gaios, kind of just like a red dragon looking thing.
Nothing much changes about him.
Very much, again, quite a bit like the 90s era Gaios. Mm-hmm. And I like his. I like his look. You got Jiger, who, you know, has kind of got the... There's a bunch of little Jigers, and then I think one big Jiger. But, you know, he's kind of the dinosaur... looking triceratops almost looking thing with the frill on his back and the tusk and mm-hmm. you know everything. He looks cool. You got Zegra, who I think Zegra's probably got the best upgrade on this show. You know, he looks like Zegra. He's got the blue tint, kind of like this, almost looks like a kind of a bird like creature but underwater, maybe like a manta ray kind of thing. But he's got this really long spiked tail that he uses to fight Gamera with, and he's pretty cool. And then you got Varas, who I don't know how you would extract. I mean, he's got the tentacles, and he's got like this giant. What was I trying to think of? Like the top of his head, it shoots like that giant anti gravity beam or whatever.
Yeah,
he looks kind of like a monster you would see, and I don't know, kind of like Arrival. Remember the Arrival monsters?
Kinda.
There's something else, and I can see it in my mind, but I can't remember what it was or what I saw it from that he looks like. But anyway, no, he looks cool. I think he got a creepy upgrade. Oh, and then I forgot Giron, the knife head guy.
Yeah.
You know, he looks really cool. He's kind of got the layered armor, kind of segmented body, a really long head knife
thing.
He's very agile in the show. Does a lot of the spinny.
Way more agile than he was in the live action. Yeah,
well, you know, that was a guy in a suit crawling on all fours. It's hard to do that stuff. But,
yeah.
No, they do a really cool upgrade for him. I think he shoots the ninja stars too, like he...
Yeah, he shoots the ninja stars.
Like he used to in the old shows with the red beady eyes. No, I think he looks really cool too. So overall, I think creature design is really good in this. Mm-hmm. I like the updates they gave everybody. Bad. Usually we talk about effects. We'll talk about animation in its place. This is my biggest complaint with the show.
It's that weird 3D animation style.
Yeah, that 3D animation style that I complain about every time. I didn't like it in Godzilla anime trilogy. It looks like they put a little more time and effort into mm-hmm. it than they did in the Godzilla anime trilogy. I can at least tell the characters apart, which I couldn't do in the anime trilogy.
It looked like they just copied and pasted them in that.
Yeah, the backgrounds are a little more fluid than they were in that anime Godzilla trilogy, but still, you know, I don't like it in the Godzilla stuff. I don't like it in the Ultraman Netflix anime.
Or any other.
I don't really ever like it. I much prefer them just to do traditional, cell-drawn 2D animation.
But Netflix is trying to bring this style.
For whatever reason, they are sticking to this thing. Whatever. You know, I can live with it. After you watch the show for a little while, you kind of forget about it, but anyway, it's there. And then the score works. I mean, of course, you got the opening J-pop song. It's pretty catchy on this show, I think. Not bad. But the actual score, it works. I think it works perfectly for the show. Of course, the best piece of music is at the very end of the show when they do like this acoustic version of the Gamma March. It's very soothing, actually. Got it on my Spotify playlist. I enjoy it quite a bit. But overall, no. Good score. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to get into final thoughts?
Why not, you know?
So, you know, like I said. Or actually, I'm sorry. Andrew, go first.
Well, final thoughts. The show overall, it's a pretty decent show. It has good character arcs, has good animation. Animation is better than what we've seen in past shows, but it's still a little sketchy in places. But the score is pretty good. It fits the show pretty well. And, you know, the creature design, it's upgraded. Some of the monsters look pretty cool. Some of them just look like a modified version of the other live-action versions. But, you know, Gamma, he looks pretty cool in this one.
Yeah.
He, like you said, he's just a modified version of the 90s trilogy thing with the armored plating and the wars.
And then the baby Gamera reminded me a lot of the Gamera, the brave Gamera. With the big eyes and the...
But he's way smaller.
Way smaller, little.
Little baby. Well, you know, overall this show is pretty good and I'm gonna give it a pass. An A.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's a good show. That, you know, like I said, Spielbergian kind of element. I like the dynamic between the kids. I think most of the characters work pretty well in this show. I mean, it's not high art.
No.
Okay? I mean, we're not talking about, like, Vinland Saga here in terms of anime quality or whatever. But, no, it's a good show. Good kaiju. The compliment I will give it, and I know this is a low bar, but it easily clears it. It's the best kaiju animated project that we've had so far.
Yes.
So, you know, way better than the Godzilla anime trilogy, better than Singular Point, which we'll talk about next week. Better than the Ultraman. I would say probably better than the Ultraman anime, which, you know, we might have to talk about that at some point too. I can't remember. Did we talk about season one before we gave it up? I don't remember if we did or not.
Sure.
We might have to go back and talk about that show at some point. But yeah, I think it's a pretty fun time. I think if you like Gamera at all, I think it's definitely worth your time to watch it if you have a Netflix subscription. So, yeah, I'll give it a B. I think it's a good B show.
A good B show, yeah.
But you know what else we got to talk about, Andrew? We got some news. We got some news to talk about, do we ever? Yeah. First of all, I would like to congratulate Minus One on a good opening weekend. It made $11.4 million on opening weekend, which was third at the box office behind Beyonce and the Hunger Games movie. But that was, I believe, the highest opening weekend in the United States for a live action foreign language film. And then on Monday it made another $1.3 million or whatever, which was the first time in 19 years it was a foreign live action film to be number one at the box office. 19 years, what was 19 years ago? Probably Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
So
very impressive. It's a great movie, guys. If you haven't got a chance to go see it in theaters, go watch it. Like I said, I'll probably try to catch it at least one more time before it leaves theaters. They extended the box. You know, initially it was only listed for a week, but they've extended it out for 2 weeks to the 14th. So, yep, keep supporting it. It's a great movie. But, you know, it doesn't get any better than that as far as Godzilla goes. But, speaking of new Godzilla projects... there was a trailer the other day for Godzilla X Kong, the new empire. What are your initial thoughts on the trailer?
It's something. It's like they just had a 4-year-old write the script and was like, bring in big monkeys and giant red dinosaur.
Yeah, I mean, we knew we were getting sillier and sillier. You know, watching the progression of the MonsterVerse. I mean, Godzilla vs. Kong was pretty was pretty out there. But, you know, I praised that movie because it was dumb fun. It didn't get bogged down in all the bad human drama.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying Godzilla movies shouldn't have human drama. Obviously, I praised Minus One for its great characters. But the MonsterVerse has time and time again failed to have good human characters. So if you just can't do it, just don't do it. just forget about it. Just have Big Monkey punch Big Lizard. And this trailer, oh God, I don't even know. I don't even know if I can handle it. I mean, Godzilla's pink, like an amethyst pink, for reasons I don't know. He's like charged, got supercharged from the Hollow Earth or something.
It looked like King Kong has like the Infinity Gauntlet.
Kong has like a mech arm thing at some point, and we get our first decent look at. What, Scar King or whatever the heck, the Jungle Book villain.
He has, like, an army of other monkeys.
He's an orangutan, I think. He's supposed to be a giant orangutan. And there's a lot of Kongs. There's a baby Kong. We're getting the Son of Kong movie we always wanted. Just kidding. But there's going to be a baby Kong that I think Kong takes a liking to. Kong's still running around with his Godzilla fin battle axe or whatever. At some point, Kong, like, crawls up from out from under the pyramids.
For some reason.
Godzilla bursts out of the ice in the Arctic or something. And
Pink.
The shot at the end of the trailer where they're like both sprinting. Oh, I don't like it. It just looks so goofy. And Godzilla just like Godzilla's proportions, I don't know, looks just way off. I don't know. You know, people, there's been a lot of division online. From the fandom. I think the fact that this movie... I'll go ahead and say this now. Of course, I haven't seen the movie, so I may change my mind. I don't know. The fact that this movie is coming out for whatever. It'll be like 4 months after... Or 5 months after...
Minus One.
Is in my probably, in my view, really going to hurt this movie. Because we've seen now with Minus One that... Oh, yeah. Godzilla can still be great. Like, legit great cinema. And then we go back to the MonsterVerse, and it's like, what are we doing? And I know people will say, and I've seen this argument online, well, the Showa era was crazy. Why can't the MonsterVerse be crazy? Mm-hmm. And I'll tell, again, everybody is entitled to their opinion. If people love the MonsterVerse and love this movie that's going to come out, and again, I don't know, maybe I'll love it when it comes out. I haven't seen it yet. I mean, that's all great. I don't begrudge anybody for the opinions they hold on Godzilla movies. Most of the time. But in my view, you know, like the Showa era movies, they were trying to make entertaining movies with very limited resources and doing the best they can. These MonsterVerse movies, at least relatively speaking, have practically unlimited resources. They just choose to make bad movies. And they still can't make them fun like those old Godzilla movies. And also for me, it is really hard in this day and age to make a good, cheesy movie.
Yes.
I mean, cheesiness is, at least for me, works a lot better when you're in a movie with that 60s, 70s era aesthetic. With the film grain and the, you know, the lack of computer effects and the bad ADR and all that. It just all kind of culminates if you have the right... you know, filmmakers in a fun, cheesy time. When your movie is cheesy, but it also looks like it costs $200 million, I don't know. It's just a different feel. It's just not. There's a real art to making a blockbuster film good and cheesy at the same time. And it's an art that very, very few have successfully pulled off.
Yes.
So, I guess in conclusion, I'll say I'm worried. Because, like I said... I say Godzilla vs. Kong was a fun time. It was dumb, but it was fun.
Yeah.
And I think the second best MonsterVerse movie I said behind Skull Island. This one looks way out there. And I just don't know how far you can push the boundaries. But I don't know. Yeah. We'll see. It's got Rebecca Black, I think that's her name. She's coming back. She's got an awful haircut, by the way, in the trailer. I don't know who did that. They've added... Oh, what's the guy's name from Downton Abbey and, you know, that show. Anyway, he's in it.
Yeah.
And the little girl Gia, or whatever her name was, is coming back. Brian Tyree Henry, I think he's still in the trailer. He's coming back. So, was Kyle Chandler in the trailer?
No.
I can't remember.
Sure.
I can't remember if he was or not. Millie Bobby Brown is not coming back, as far as I know.
No.
So, yeah. So the trailer's out there. You can go watch it. And we'll see in April, I guess, how good it is or isn't. But, yeah. So, anyway, I think that's about all we have as far as news. I haven't made it as far into planning as I had wanted to, but I know that next week we're going to do Singular Point. I know that the week after that we're going to try to do the Kong anime. And then after that...
We'll go...
I don't know. We'll go from there. I think when Blazar concludes, we'll probably do an episode on that, but yeah. I think it's still got probably like 5 weeks left.
I have some movies on the
show. We got some movies we want to cover. Like I said, we might go back at some point. Maybe not in the immediate future, but at some point and cover that Netflix Ultraman anime.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. I mean, we got some stuff. We got some stuff we can cover.
Yeah.
I need to sit down and kind of work out what we want to do in the near future. But anyway, I believe that is all we got for you guys today. As always, thank you for listening. I'm Aaron.
I'm Andrew.
And we'll see you in the next one.